From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, New Hampshire has spoken, and the winners by a wide margin could not be much further from the same old, same old. For Republicans, billionaire, maverick, first time in politics, Donald J. Trump.
Thank you, New Hampshire, thank you. We are going now to South Carolina.
All right, and for the Democrats, Mr. Political Revolution, Democratic Socialist, 74-year-old hero to the young and more, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Because of a huge voter turnout, and I say huge, we won.
Yes, he did. Yes, they did. We're just back from New Hampshire, and we're not surprised they led the polls, but still, this is kind of amazing. This hour On Point, the winners in New Hampshire and the race for the presidency. Now you can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Could these two go all the way to the general election? What about Hillary Clinton, Cruz, Kasich, Rubio, the rest? What do you see coming now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Janelle Ross. She covers politics, race, and gender for The Washington Post, a fellow at the New America Foundation. Janelle, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Also with us from Washington, Ben Domenech, co-founder and publisher of the web magazine The Federalist, fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Ben Domenech, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
McKay Coppins joins us in a few minutes. Ben, speak to what's going on in the minds. We'll start with the Republicans in the minds of the masters of the Republican universe. What does this mean?
It means that they've lost control of their party. And I think that the initial results that you've seen from Iowa and New Hampshire have proven that in a very significant way. There was a narrative going into New Hampshire that Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, had a good deal of momentum, that he was going to be able to build on a third place finish in Iowa, that he was going to overperform expectations in New Hampshire. Instead, he had a poor debate performance and fell back all the way to fifth in New Hampshire. Right now, the Republican establishment, the donor class, the elites in Washington and elsewhere are really trying to scramble to figure out where to go from here. John Kasich, who came in second in New Hampshire, doesn't have an obvious path. He also has really the least money of any of the major candidates in the race, and so there's no real obvious opportunity for him to become the establishment candidate. Jeb Bush overperformed expectations and beat Rubio in New Hampshire. So right now, the establishment of the Republican Party is in total disarray. They don't know who to turn to, and they're frustrated by an election that has really gone against their expectations in all sorts of different respects, and by the personages of Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, both of which are anathema to them for different reasons.
Janelle Ross, I want to come to you on the Democrats. Here was Bernie Sanders with all those supporters around him last night in full flow. Bernie Sanders in a victory speech.
We have sent the message that will echo from Wall Street to Washington, from Maine to California. And that is that the government of our great country belongs to all of the people and not just a handful of wealthy campaign contributors and their super PACs.
Janelle, that was a roar last night, and not just there in the hall celebrating the victory, but really in the vote itself. What about the Democrats, the Democratic establishment? I guess that means in no small part the Clintons, and how the party and the Clintons are now looking at this race.
You know, I want to, unfortunately, I'll have to say, echo much of what Ben said about the Republican Party. I'm not sure that Democrats would acknowledge a state of disarray at this point, but there's certainly has to be some serious soul-searching and discussion happening this morning. I think that there were almost, without question, I think that the Clinton campaign went into New Hampshire expecting Bernie Sanders to win.
Yeah.
It's a neighbor to his home state. So in some ways, what happened last night really did not come as a surprise. But when you dig into the numbers, it's the extent to which Bernie Sanders won, and that he won so resoundingly with so many different groups of voters that really has to be sending up some strong alarm bells. Also because Bernie Sanders won with some of the groups of voters that have really become increasingly important to the Democratic coalition and their ability or plans to win any race in the general election. They really have to find some sort of way to put together a coalition of enthusiastic young white progressives and people of color. Of course, New Hampshire and Iowa are not great places to test a candidate's performance with voters of color. But when it comes to young voters, when it comes to voters that are well-educated, when it comes to women, and in particular white women, Bernie Sanders did incredibly well in New Hampshire. And so whatever critiques have been offered of his campaign, at this point, he's got to be taken seriously.
And here's Hillary with this remarkable statement last night at her concession speech, rallying forward but acknowledging she's got some work to do.
I know I have some work to do, particularly with young people, but I will repeat again what I have said this week. Even if they are not supporting me now, I support them.
Okay, let's dig in here a little further, Janelle. The Democrats looking forward. The Republicans are still a big field. That's got all kinds of dynamics. We'll look at them. But the Democrats, does Hillary Clinton think that she's sitting on some kind of firewall in the South? That's the word that was out there for months. Even though Bernie was campaigning next door, though I don't believe this is about being neighbors, that win a victory that big among that many sectors last night. I think it's way more than that. Does she still think she's got a firewall in the South and beyond South Carolina, Nevada's coming up, that will stop Bernie Sanders, or are they shaking deeper than that, Janelle?
I think that they're still pretty confident that the demographic makeup of the states that are to come, particularly South Carolina, to a slightly lesser extent Nevada, and then several of the states in the deep South that come right after that, that I believe the Clinton campaign remains pretty convinced that they have a pretty strong foothold and are going to have to get on the ground and certainly do some work to hold on to it. But they, I think, are pretty confident. And in fairness, there's a lot of data on their side to back up this idea. Of course, nothing is a guarantee, and they'll need to probably pay particular attention to not repeating some of the mistakes that we've seen Clinton make before when she's found herself in a more challenging position than perhaps anticipated.
Like what, Janelle?
Think back to 2008 mm-hmm. in South Carolina. The Clintons, you know, as a collective team, were very much on the ground and very much fighting for votes, but decided to do so in a way that was very, I think, offensive to some voters. This idea that Clinton was the ordained candidate or the most logical, likely, and presumptive candidate, and perhaps even the only reasonable candidate or the electable candidate, really was not something that was well received. So that's something she'll need to be mindful of going forward. It also is a core part of her argument against Sanders. So it'll be very interesting to watch how they choose to navigate that.
I mean, you could hear her struggling not to sound, she has for a while, but even more last night, to not sound entitled. It didn't look entitled with that outcome. And on the Republican side, I mean, what do you do with a candidate, Ben, like Donald Trump with his meta kind of promise to the electorate, everything is going to be so great. He said it again and again, and he said it last night in Manchester, celebrating that victory.
So we're going to take care of the economy. We're going to take care of jobs. We're going to take care of all of the things that I said, our border, everything, healthcare. It's going to be so great.
Ben, everything's going to be great. There's who needs anybody else? Donald's got it covered.
You know, it is a situation that I think has been coming along for a long time. There is a portion of the Republican electorate that is not really infatuated with the typical ideological ideas of fiscal or social conservatism. They're much more akin to kind of an identity politics portion of the electorate, and that has amounted to essentially about a quarter of the electorate in Iowa and more than a third in New Hampshire now for Donald Trump. And I think that he's going to continue winning a lot of those those voters going forward. To Janelle's point, I think that the South Carolina electorate now is going to be have enormous influence on the outcome of this race going forward. How they respond to these early results, what cues they take away from the performances of these candidates in Iowa and New Hampshire is going to really feed into a lot of things. I'm a South Carolina native myself. I was there in 2012 when you saw sort of the brief rise of Newt Gingrich, and you saw that impact on the Republican field. It could be a situation now where South Carolina is going to determine if there's anybody who could potentially block Donald Trump from the nomination. He is the front runner at this point, but Ted Cruz is standing there as someone who looks a lot more like the typical kind of person you would nominate in the sense of a politician who's got that Ivy League resume, who's got the kind of degrees and background. It's simply the animosity of Washington toward him, of the Republican elites toward him, that have prevented him from being more of the consensus candidate to this point.
Maybe,
the real question is whether
the real question
is whether they can swallow that pride and decide that he's the one chance that they have to stop Donald Trump.
As if Trump supporters care about his Ivy League background. I mean, Janelle, could you see in the general election Trump v. Sanders?
Listen, at this point, it would seem that the only wise thing that one can say is that anything is possible. And clearly, both Sanders and Trump have found pretty effective ways to appeal to some voters. The question is really, as Ben said, what is going to happen as this race moves forward? And in particular, how are South Carolina voters going to respond to the messages that Trump and Sanders, if we must give them anything, have been very consistent in delivering thus far? Are those messages that have particular appeal to voters in South Carolina? How deeply are they going to be influenced by the outcomes in New Hampshire and Iowa? And then finally, you know, how seriously do they take their own role in essentially vetting or determining who the candidates will be? Because if either Sanders or Trump kind of come out of South Carolina victorious, it would seem that at this point it would become the most likely outcome that one or both of them will be their party's nominee.
And if it's both, what a scene. What a scene. I mean, people in both parties said Trump can't win, Sanders can't win in the general election. But if the two supposed losers come up against each other, one of them would be the next president of the United States. We're looking at the results out of New Hampshire. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. A little Sanders celebration last night in New Hampshire. Bruce Springsteen in the background, and in the foreground, all those voices. Young women did very well with women. The Democratic Socialist out of Vermont saying, what's the problem with that? Let's have a political revolution. And on he goes. On the other side, Donald Trump doing very, very well indeed in the GOP, where there is now a kind of havoc or maybe panic about who is actually going to be their flag bearer in the general election. Right now, you've got Trump right out front there, and on it goes to South Carolina. Janelle Ross is with us, reporter for The Washington Post, joining us today from Washington. Ben Domenech, co-founder, publisher of the web magazine The Federalist, with us from Washington as well. You can join us this hour. Trump supporters, Sanders supporters, tell us what you see here. Would you have thought, everybody, I guess, a year ago, 6 months ago, that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders would be out front, way out front, coming out of New Hampshire in the race for the White House? And can these two hang on? Can they? Could they go the full distance? Mainstream Republicans, Clinton supporters, what are you thinking today? Here's Sanders last night, New Hampshire.
9 months ago, we began our campaign here in New Hampshire. We had no campaign organization, we had no money, and we were taking on the most powerful political organization in the United States of America.
By which I guess he means the Clintons. We'll talk about Donald Trump coming out, say he's going to be the greatest jobs president God ever created.
We're going to win so much. You are going to be so happy. We are going to make America so great again, maybe greater than ever before. I love you all. Thank you, New Hampshire. Thank you. Thank you, New Hampshire. Thank you. We are going now to South Carolina. We're going to win in South Carolina. I love you all. Thank you very much.
Well, they're all going there anyway, and we'll see how that turns out. Lots of callers for you, Janelle and Ben. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, one of the things that I really despise is when people try and compare what Bernie Sanders is doing and what's going on in the Democratic Party and what's going on with Donald Trump. The two parts couldn't be further apart.
Well, they're both big winners last night. They have that much in common, Carl.
They have that in common, and that's it. On the one hand, you have Bernie and Hillary, who's really not separated by no more than 2 or 3% as far as what they want to get done and how they want to do it. And it's a good argument. It's a good debate. And on the other hand, you have a guy like Donald Trump. I can't even repeat what he said day before yesterday on national television to an audience with children. So you have the party that's supposed to be the evangelical Christians, the party of family values, and they overwhelmingly elected a guy who has absolutely none of that. And people get mad at me when I call the Republican Party the evil evangelical hypocrites. But they prove it to me day in and day out. There's no way in the world a guy this foul, he is nowhere near presidential status. He's not a gentleman, but he's leading in the Republican Party. That says a lot about where they are right now. So given the choice between Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders and their values and what they're standing for and the direction for our country, how any Christian, for that matter, could vote against them.
Carl, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Ben Dominich, speak to this, if you would. Ted Cruz, let us remember, did just win in Iowa and won fairly handily there. Not by the kind of margin that Donald Trump had last night in New Hampshire, but he certainly won. I was in New Hampshire with Ted Cruz when he's calling the crowd to prayer in a bar there, but seriously calling people to prayer and people praying with him. And then, yes, there's Donald Trump with a very different sound. Not so much, he may be the greatest job creator God ever created, but it's not so much about God. It's about winning. It's about winning. And,
well, we should be devoted to spirits of all kinds, Tom, I think, generally in our lives. Just to speak to the caller's point, New Hampshire is, of course, a much more secular state than Iowa. And I think that that's one of the reasons why Donald Trump had so much success there. I think also it's interesting to sort of look at where his support comes from primarily within the Republican coalition. It's a lot of people who describe themselves as more moderate, who describe themselves as less evangelical, less focused on faith issues, things of that nature. That's certainly the portion of the party that is responding the most to his message. When it comes to the comparison to Sanders, though, I actually think that where Trump and Sanders align is that both of them are essentially saying that the game is rigged, that the current situation in the economy in Washington is rigged against the little guy, and that they will fix it. Sanders' solution to that, of course, is what he describes as democratic socialism. I would suggest that what Trump suggests as his solution is a kind of economic nationalism, sort of an authoritarian approach to, I'm going to make this economy work for you. And so in that sense, they're both kind of working off of and responding to similar effects and movements within the frustrations that exist within the economy, but they're doing so in very different ways.
McKay Coppins joins us right now as well in the studio. Janelle, Ben, stand by. McKay's senior political writer for BuzzFeed, author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. McKay, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So the other angle that our caller from Nashville brings up, Carl, is, look, this guy's vulgar. He's vulgar. He's vile. He's foul. Carl says, okay, that's Carl, but there has been the view that he's too out there. He's too, like, too much of a reality TV show star, as Jeb Bush would have it, to actually be the flag bearer in the general election. Are Republicans beginning to accommodate themselves to that notion right now?
That's an interesting question. So when I was in Iowa, where the Republican primary electorate is much more religious, perhaps much more focused on propriety, I heard a lot of people at Cruz rallies, at Trump rallies, complain about his vulgarity, complain about his the jokes he makes, the way he can like needle and bully other candidates, and if you're just a suburban church going woman or man in Des Moines or something like that, there's a lot about Donald Trump Trump that you wish he would tone down? Because a lot of these people will say, I like his general message. I like that he's breaks the rules. But I wish he would dial it back like 20%. You know what I mean?
I don't know if Donald is going to dial anything back.
He's not known for that.
maybe as he gets closer. Jim in Stuart, Florida. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. I am so excited about the outcome. So excited. Months ago, I was telling friends that the two of them would be the greatest contenders for representing each party.
The two. You're talking Sanders and Trump.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the two of them, really don't mince words. I mean, even though Donald Trump is a bit harsh, neither one of them minces words. And ultimately, Sanders is just taking a pro-labor, while Trump is taking a pro-business approach to things, and it's not being clouded by other things. So, for example, Ted Cruz. There are very influential evangelical ministers who are saying he is anointed by God. And it's just not a relevant topic for what needs to be done. And, the other thing about Ted Cruz, too, is that he's got a lot of backing by big oil. And, a big concern now is that right as renewables are getting their legs, they need a little bit more support from from the federal government.
Jim, we've got it. Yeah. You're glad for these two. You like the sort of clarity, maybe, or the distance between them. I mean, it was my first Donald Trump speech, to be in the hall for the first full speech. That was some experience, a sort of scatter, splatter. I've never seen political rhetoric just like that. But the points are in there. People hear them. The attitude is in there. And last night there he was saying, well, it could be. I mean, suggesting it could be me, Donald Trump, and Bernie Sanders. Wouldn't that be something? Here was Trump last night.
Congratulations to Bernie. In all fairness, we have to congratulate him. We may not like it, but I heard parts of Bernie's speech. He wants to give away our country, folks. He wants to give away. We're not going to let it happen. We're not going to let it happen. I don't know where it's going with Bernie. We are going to make America great again, but we're going to do it the old-fashioned way.
Bernie Sanders acknowledging last night that this is going to be tough, sort of putting himself in that front-runner status and saying, we're going to have to unite at some point.
We will need to come together in a few months and unite this party and this nation, because the right-wing Republicans we oppose must not be allowed to gain the presidency.
Janelle Ross, let's say it went to the general. We'll talk about all the ways in which this may not be the final matchup. But if it does, how does that look to you? We talked about the polarization in this country. Does it get more polarized than Trump versus Sanders? Or, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
It is a most interesting phenomenon in that I would say that Sanders and Trump supporters, in my, limited sample of interaction with voters and emails and telephone calls, seem to have a lot in common, to be frank. So it is intriguing, and it does seem that matchup would put a number of people in an interesting position. People who are sort of the most traditional wings of their respective parties, of the Republican and Democratic parties, might be very much appalled, quite frankly, by that matchup. But it is also true that it's unlikely that the most loyal party members are going to stay home or are going to cross party lines. That's always a possibility, but it's an unlikely possibility. I think I do want to, if I can, though, circle back to two things that were raised by each of the callers. One, the caller from Nashville, I think, really raises something very important. And I say this as a former resident of Nashville. Mm-hmm. Understand that Nashville is a very cosmopolitan, major southern city. And this is what much of the South is like. Of course, there are still many rural places and small towns, but this is what much of the South is like.
What does that mean for the race?
It means this, which is that if in a major city in the South, it doesn't sound as if the caller was a Trump supporter, but if in a major city in the South where religious values are really a common denominator and a real sort of organizing point of social life, if the conversation is what that caller raised, that Mr. Trump is a foul and vulgar individual.
Not a gentleman.
And is this appropriate? He is not a gentleman. That's a noteworthy comment. If that's what the conversation is, and that's what the conversation is throughout the Deep South, it's a very real possibility that that presents some real problems for Donald Trump that really have not been discussed. And then with regard to the second caller, his point that he really and truly deeply appreciates the sort of unbridled, unrestrained way with which Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders speak is a really interesting one, because when you look and listen to both of their victory speeches last night, what you got was a lot of what is essentially their stump speech. And where Donald Trump is concerned, what he actually plans to do, the details of what he plans to do, have really not been spelled out. What you do have, though, is a lot of these really big, bold, sometimes brash, even vulgar statements. And this is what people are interpreting as a straight talker, a straight shooter. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And it really, really, really means that there will be some intense campaigning as we move forward.
I can't believe you say that the details aren't there. It's very clear. He's going to make everything great. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I must have heard that 50 times in his speech the other night. Listen, people want that. People respond to that big message. Brian, Clinton, Iowa. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a pretty, I guess it's probably my opinion from my area, but from all the people that I talk to that are some Bernie supporters. I think the main reason that we support Bernie, and believe me, most of my friends didn't vote before this election or this caucus, was because they're sick of establishment politics.
Yep.
And I think they're sick of the two-party system, and both these candidates have clinged to the two-party system, and because they have to. They don't stand a chance if they don't.
Brian,
that's my opinion.
Yep. Brian, we got it, and I appreciate it. Ben Domenech, you're there in Washington. Can you feel the city feeling the wrath at the gate, saying we're going to have to re-gear here, go home, change our spots, be different, the party's over?
They see the pitchforks and torches on the horizon, Tom.
The golden ones included, Donald.
You know, the line from Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight applies here. You know, you have all these rules and you think they'll save you. The rules don't apply in this election. And I think that this is a situation now where the elites of both parties, I think, are really feeling that this could be spinning out of control in a way that not just the historians, students of history, people who've looked at the way that you analyze elections like this, all of the prognosticators who very early on said Donald Trump would not amount to anything, said, you know, Bernie Sanders was just a sideshow, are having to revisit and reevaluate a lot of their opinions. The real question going forward is, does the party decide on either side to really try to push out these insurrections? Do they try to shut them down? Do they try to
as if they haven't been trying? I mean, what?
Well, here's the thing. They have been trying, but they've been trying within the normal framework of things, as opposed to changing the rules on the allocation of delegates. You know, changing the metrics by which people are able to win the nomination. Trying to force a situation, particularly on the Republican side, where you would go to a convention without anybody having a clear majority of delegates, gaming the system that they've created.
That sounds dangerous. I mean, people are fired up and they're mad already. Change the rules.
Exactly. They're incredibly angry, and I think that would be a huge mistake for either party to try to force the issue. But that's something that people are talking about, and it's really a question mark on the Republican side of whether they'll try to engage in such behavior. I think the more likely scenario is this: they're confronted now with the reality where there's going to be someone who's going to be able to block Donald Trump on the Republican side. Who is that person going to be? All signs point to it being Ted Cruz. And that's something that I think that the Washington sort of Republican elites are very uncomfortable with. They dislike him personally. They have an intense dislike for him. And I think that you've seen a little bit of cozying up to Donald Trump in recent weeks for that reason. We'll see how real that really is, because at this point, I think they're really having to go back to the drawing board. On the Democratic side, this affection for Bernie Sanders is a very real and tangible thing, particularly among young voters. And I think that that's something that is going to be be really problematic for Democrats in the sense that even if you beat Bernie, you need to do so in a way that doesn't turn his young voters off, that doesn't make them want to stay home as opposed to coming out for Hillary Clinton come the fall. And that's going to be a real challenge for them.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the race for the presidency after New Hampshire, Trump and Sanders victorious, and everybody else scrambling. Here's the sound of crowds as the Reverend Al Sharpton met Bernie Sanders in New York this morning for breakfast at the famed Harlem restaurant Sylvia's. Bernie Sanders putting his flag right in there in Harlem for the black vote across this country and certainly in South Carolina, the South, where he is headed very, very soon. Janelle Ross is with us this hour, politics, race, and gender reporter for The Washington Post. Ben Domenech is here from The Federalist. McKay Coppins from BuzzFeed News. You can join us. What do you see coming for Hillary Clinton? Ted Cruz, John Kasich, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush? I don't know. What is it about the politics of this year that has put once unthinkables like Trump and Sanders right there in the winner's circle? Hillary Clinton last night, not giving up the road ahead. She's on it.
Now we take this campaign to the entire country. We're going to fight for every vote in every state. We're going to fight for real solutions that make a real difference in people's lives.
And Ted Cruz pointing out accurately, my guests are saying, these results have, even his in Iowa, the Washington cartel, as he describes it, terrified.
Your victory tonight has left the Washington cartel utterly terrified. And so now on to South Carolina, on to Nevada, on to Super Tuesday.
They are not giving up. Clinton Cruz is going to be, what do they say on NPR this morning, long, brutal, and I forget all the rest of it. But McKay, we'll look at those other configurations that could still emerge here. Mm-hmm. But if it should be the billionaire and the socialist in the general election, how do you see that unfolding?
I think that the point you made earlier about the polarization is really important. I was in Iowa covering the caucuses, and I went to a Donald Trump event, and his campaign doesn't give me credentials for reasons that we don't have to
persona
go into.
Persona non grata.
But that means I get to spend a lot of time in line with the supporters because I go in with the general public. Yeah. And I was fascinated in Iowa City, where University of Iowa is. I stood in line for 2 hours. It was late, very cold, with these Trump supporters, and we were kind of slowly moving toward the door. And there were a bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters protesting outside. They looked like all students from the college campus, and I mean. It was very cold. It was very late. You could never have imagined, you know, Hillary Clinton supporters out that late or Marco Rubio supporters for that matter. These people are passionate. But the thing that I thought was so interesting was both of them, we eventually got to this point where the Trump supporters were right next to the Sanders supporters, and they were just basically standing in rows facing each other, yelling things at each other. And they would, you know, one of the students, the Sanders students, accused them of being Nazis. And then the Trump supporters, said that you just want free stuff and started swearing at them. And they would do this. And then they would kind of retreat for a little while back to their own groups and laugh about the ignorance or ridiculousness of the other side, as though the other side was kind of a foil for them.
Is this scary or cathartic if it comes to this
matchup? Well, I mean, in that case, look, there was no violence. I didn't think it got out of control.
I don't mean right there, but
politically,
picture that on a national scale.
And this
picture Donald Trump facing Bernie Sanders, bringing on all that derision, you know how he goes for the put down.
And you played those two clips from last night's speeches, Trump and Sanders. They both take really hard shots at the other side. Their entire campaigns are animated by the other side being demons or villains or boogeymen. And that matters. I mean, look, the last thing I'll say about this is the last time we had a really kind of transformational figure, storm through a presidential campaign was 2008 with Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But his message was about unifying the country. Yes, and, you know, whether whatever you thought of him as a president, it was hope changed, you bringing the country together, purple America, right? That is not what you're hearing from Sanders, and it's not what you're hearing from Trump. They may pay lip service to it, but it's not central to their message.
I mean, Cruz v. Sanders would scarcely be less polarizing. Ted Cruz would come at it with even more angles on it.
Right.
Well, the religious angle.
Yes, Cruz would add a religious angle and probably do it in a very different way. But yes, it's the same message.
We got more to look at here. Jill in Franconia, New Hampshire, where they just did the deed. Jill, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. So I'm a Hillary supporter, but I want to praise the Sanders campaign for their ground game. I live in a really rural area of New Hampshire at the end of a very long driveway, and I had multiple visits from Sanders volunteers, even yesterday on Election Day. I also received personalized text messages before Election Day and on Election Day. And I think these efforts really speak to the passion and devotion of Bernie supporters and help potential voters feel a personal connection with the campaign, which could make a really big difference with undecided voters looking forward. But, of course, I'm a little disappointed as well.
Well, that's commitment, and that's a get-out-the-vote drive. Janelle, take us south for a second to South Carolina. You've got a very different demographic there. Iowa, of course, and New Hampshire, among the widest states in the Union. And, yes, there's Bernie Sanders today with Al Sharpton in Harlem, you know, making a first step of sort of more than a first step, but not the first time, but putting his hand out there. The Clintons historically are seen as having, I don't know if it's a lock, but certainly a very strong position among minorities. So how does South Carolina look on the Democratic side, you know?
Well, this is one of the things that I think is really intriguing here. I think that we have some information and some data that certainly indicates that Bernie Sanders has some real challenges ahead. You know, generally speaking, when you look at his numbers nationally, and this is also true in South Carolina, Bernie Sanders lags way behind Hillary Clinton with non-white voters, specifically with black voters. And black voters make up a major part of the electorate in South Carolina, particularly for Democrats.
Yeah.
However, it is also true that I think that at least in the last week alone, it's become quite clear that we've all got to get a little more specific when we talk about groups of voters and try a little harder to understand what the sort of primary issues are for different groups of voters.
Help us with that.
I think, for instance, I think a good example of this is often, as a matter of course, when people make references to women or women voters, what they're really talking about is white women. They've decided or trained themselves not to use that phrase or to be that specific, or perhaps they feel it's unnecessary.
Why would that
be? But black women and white women have been voting differently for quite some time now.
Uh-huh.
So it matters a great deal. You know, the specificity matters. And certainly in trying to understand why, say, one candidate is doing well with women, you know, we need to be pretty specific. So I guess what I would say is the data that we have at this point is pretty limited. But what we do know is that Hillary Clinton nationally does fairly well with voters of color, or I should say very well with voters of color. They're really one of her larger points of support. However, what we don't know is how she does with younger black voters specifically. So again, when you hear these references to young people, those are really references to young white people, and this is a place where she is not doing well. And there is the question of what that will mean in South Carolina when you have a large number of young black people that also make up the electorate. There's very little data on those people. So we really will have to wait and see. Now, I don't doubt that the Clinton campaign has its own internal data and is, you know, doing its homework accordingly, and same for the Sanders campaign. But we don't have that kind of polling.
Boy, I have to get my head around this. Young means white. Woman means white. I guess I see what you mean, but you hope sometimes it means all of those. I don't. Madeleine Albright was up, of course, for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire on Saturday. Got a lot of feedback on this line there, talking about women and Hillary Clinton.
And you have to help. Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
Okay, Janelle, what about Hillary and Bernie and women? And I don't want to say just white women. Help us right across the whole spectrum.
Well, I guess I understand your point that you're interested in understanding how different groups.
Well, you can
of women
slice and dice it, but I'm interested in black, white, brown.
But I think it matters because the truth is you have some very different numbers that show up in the polling data that we do have in terms of how voters of color, specifically African Americans, and where Hillary Clinton is concerned, there's some very strong support among African American women. So when people discuss this idea that she has a problem with women voters, her problem is actually with white women voters, and it's probably best to just be frank about that, whether it makes us uncomfortable or not, because it also speaks to this. This means that something about Hillary Clinton's message or the way it's being presented is not appealing to those white women, but it is appealing to African-American women. And on the flip side, Bernie Sanders is in just the opposite position. So, you know, for the campaigns themselves, there is information to be gleaned from that kind of specificity, but also for voters and thinking about who they see as, I guess, their sort of natural political allies, I guess what they see as the likely electability prospects of the candidates that they choose to support, all of those things matter. So, I'm going to be an advocate for specificity, even if it makes people uncomfortable.
We're all for it. And uncomfortable is fine. I mean, reality is not always comfortable. A lot of people finding
not.
That. Let's go right to the next battlefront, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. Colleen is calling. Colleen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi. Are you ready for a vote down there?
I'm ready for a vote. I hope it counts. I'm an independent, and looking at the field, I do believe that Hillary has a lock on the Democrats. Like it's been said, I think that the black community has typically rallied around the Clintons, and I don't think Bernie Sanders, although I see a lot of signs, I don't think that Sanders is going to fare as well. I personally have a lot of friends that are voting for Trump, but I wish that John Kasich would get some more airtime. I think he's the most level-headed Republican. I like the plans that he's laid out, and he has my vote.
Kasich in South Carolina. Colleen, we've got it, but thinking maybe Hillary there on the Democrat side. Airtime right here, John Kasich, New Hampshire last night.
Maybe, just maybe, we're turning the page on a dark part of American politics, because tonight the light overcame the darkness of negative campaigns.
Well, we shall see. A little bit there, second place, about half of what Trump got in New Hampshire. But it was a good showing for John Kasich, and he needed to take us to South Carolina, McKay. And first, on the Democratic side, Bernie can stop off and have breakfast with Al Sharpton. He can go on south. But can he do it?
I mean, look, I think that there's been a lot of interesting writing and reporting on this. Well, but at the core of a lot of this is...
are the kids going to follow him south to do all that outreach and work they did in New Hampshire? Are going to have freedom riders down there for Bernie?
I mean, I think they might, but there's a fundamental problem with Bernie Sanders' argument and the way that a lot of his supporters make it, which particularly kind of young white Bernie Sanders supporters, which is that, you know, this whole idea that his socialist agenda will cure America of racism, that you don't actually have to tackle race directly, that you can
go through the economy,
that you can just go through
everybody
the economy and that'll
set.
Fix everything. And look, that's a very simplistic way of saying, and that's probably not how Bernie Sanders would put it. That's how a lot of his supporters make the case. And you know, I mostly cover Republicans. I sometimes will go to Democratic events. And when I talk to, you know, young voters of color, they don't necessarily, I mean, this it's all anecdotal, but they don't like that argument, right? And so that's something that you know, whether Sanders has figured that out, and he has shown at times to have kind of a tin ear when it comes to talking about racial issues, but whether he himself has figured that out is a different thing than whether his supporters who are knocking doors
somehow,
and making
I
the
think
case.
He might believe that also. He might believe that.
Yeah, I think he probably, get
a nice socialist economy. Maybe he'd say, and everybody's Ben in Austin, Texas. Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to that point and say that I don't think it's simplistic at all. I think that it's really the only way we can address the issue if you think about it, because what else are we going to do? You know, people have freedom of speech and people are free to believe what they want. So,
I mean, well, we've done a lot over the years, affirmative action, all kinds of different programs trying to address race issues. But you're down with, I don't know, raise the minimum wage and bring on universal health care and everything's cool?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good start.
Okay.
I think the other thing is that we need to bring our police to justice, too, when they commit crimes themselves. You know, like, we have to have a criminal court system that allows for police to be you know, under the law, just like everyone else's.
Yeah, Ben, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. One more word here for Ted Cruz saying, look, it's still about GOP. Who is the real conservative? And you know he's going to say that is not Donald J. Trump.
The voters will have a choice. Do we want a campaign conservative? Someone who talks a good game but hasn't walked the walk? Or do we want a consistent conservative with a proven record?
Ben Domenech, if the Republican Party has to decide whether they throw their arms around Trump or Cruz, where are they going to go?
You know, I think that Ted Cruz is ultimately the likeliest person to be the nominee of the Republican Party in 2016 for a number of reasons. He has been able to become essentially the leader of the conservative base. He's taken the libertarian support away from Rand Paul. He's taken a number of evangelicals away from other evangelical candidates in the race. And because of that, he's been able to straddle kind of a bigger portion than simply the Tea Party faction that has supported him initially. The irony of sort of the way that Cruz is viewed by sort of the D.C. establishment and Republican leaders is that he's actually a lot more pragmatic in terms of his voting record than you might expect. He kind of plays up this personality of being someone who takes on the establishment, and that's something that really has them feared. Even if he doesn't ultimately become the president of the United States, him winning the nomination would send a message to all of the freshman senators coming into Washington. Yes. On the Republican side, that the path to leading your party, the path to becoming such an influential impact member of the party is by taking on the existing system directly, which is something that Washington cannot stand. It's an idea that's far more dangerous than just the individual person of Ted Cruz. Someone like Marco Rubio came in, he played along with the game. He went along with things. Ted Cruz didn't do that, and that's something that makes people very worried.
We'll see where he goes. McKay, your best guess right now? Ben says it's going to be Cruz in the end.
I don't know. Cruz seems much more likely than Trump to me.
And Rubio?
I don't know. He has to, in the next couple of weeks, we'll know the answer to that.
we will know a lot, and we'll know soon. But, what an interesting yeah. year. What an interesting picture. American voters, New Hampshire voters this time, really having a say that is resonating all over the place. Ben Domenech with The Federalist, thanks so much for being with us today to look at all this. Ben, great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Janelle Ross, politics, race, and gender reporter at The Washington Post. We always love talking with you, Janelle. Thanks for joining us today. Come back.
And thanks for having me.
And McKay Coppins, watch out for that traffic on the way down from New Hampshire. Thank you for sliding in here today. Great to have you from BuzzFeed News, author of The Wilderness. Thanks so much, McKay.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.